Hi, my name is Daniela. My experience in singlehood was confusing, frustrating, and looking back, felt much longer than I should have allowed it to feel. Something that I realized was that I didn't want New York to just become a waiting room for me. After 3 years of living in New York, I was approached to work in a school in Dallas, Texas.
My name is Talia Malotsky. I am living right now in Chicago, in Skokie, Illinois. I would say I was always a family person. I always appreciated my own space. And actually for me personally, COVID really gave me the opportunity to be able to move home and just try it out.
Intentionally gonna remain anonymous, but I'm a friend of Zahava's and her husband, Jesse.
I was about to enter third year of law school and I moved to Borough Park.
Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Singled Out. I want to start by saying it's been quite a while, and I actually had this episode recorded and planned to drop as part of a series before Rosh Hashanah. Of course, since October 7th, the Jewish community across the world has been dealing with much heavier things, and I didn't feel like it was an appropriate time to put out the message of trying something new. I have, however, been feeling like at this stage in the war, perhaps something a bit more uplifting, while still providing meaning, is warranted, so I decided to release it. And here's my original recording from the beginning of the year. Hi guys, I hope you all had a meaningful Yamim Noraim. I wanted to kick off the first episode of the new year with a conversation about changing things up. The longer you're single, it tends to feel like you're waiting for this important part of your life to happen. And also because of that, like the other parts of your life can't fill in until you've quote unquote found your person. And I wanted to put out a series of episodes that would hopefully challenge that. We may not even realize we do this necessarily, but a lot of our decisions and desire to take part in experiences revolve around if it will be conducive to meeting someone or to getting married. And so we wait and we hold off on things. But as each year passes, that itch begins to grow. The itch for something more, for something different. And different people get this itch in different areas. So maybe it's a career shift, maybe it's broadening the kinds of people you're opening to dating. But for many, I think it's moving somewhere new. Especially being that the options for single communities are pretty limited. And if we're being honest, I don't know if many people really like living there. I think most people tolerate living there. And after living somewhere for a few years at least, with not much shifting, you're probably craving a change. Moving somewhere new can be such an exciting and romantic idea, and frankly an amazing opportunity that only being in a specific life stage allows. When I told my teaching job after 4 years I was quitting to do a fellowship in Israel, I was really nervous. A coworker of mine who was in her late 50s approached me after she heard that I would be leaving, and I remember she looked at me and said, "I'm so envious of you. I haven't had an adventure in a long time." That actually gave me a whole new appreciation for the move I was about to make. But as exciting as moving can be, it definitely can come with challenges, even when it's temporary. And that's what this episode is about. Three different people who tell different stories about three very different moves. I hope you guys enjoy it, and let's get into it.
Hi, my name is Daniela. I grew up in Florida, and I currently live in a town called Boreham Wood, which is right outside of London. My experience in singlehood was confusing, frustrating, and looking back, felt much longer than I should have allowed it to feel. I started dating really young. I stayed in Israel after seminary, and I decided to start dating then, so at 19. And I was convinced I was going to get married young. I did not know that it could have taken a long time to find the one. I didn't think that was something that was going to happen to anyone, let alone me. And in Israel, actually, the dating scene was really good for me. People were really willing to set me up. People who I knew, people who I didn't know but met on the bus. everyone was really eager to set me up with people that they knew. And I ended up dating quite a few people in Israel, but not the one. After a couple of years there, I decided to come back to America and study in Stern. I really wanted to go into Jewish education, and I just felt like that was the right path. Ironically, I was not excited for the dating scene in New York, even though that was where everyone said it needed to be. I felt like there was a lot of pressure. And when I got there, all of my concerns were correct. I was studying in Stern, and I felt like there was just this pressure to make sure that you stood out. It also just seemed that everyone was constantly going on dates, and wherever you turned, there were people on a date getting engaged, and it was just a very pressurized environment for me in regards to dating. I did fill my time with a lot of other things, working really hard in university and also having a few jobs on the side and spending time with friends and family, but it just still felt like wherever you went, whatever Shabbos meal you were at, people were talking about dating, marriage, who last got engaged. It was all consuming. After 3 years of living in New York, I was approached to work in a school in Dallas, Texas. When they initially called me and reached out to me, I said, thank you very much. That is my dream job. I would love to move out to a community outside of New York and work in a Jewish community there, but I can't because I'm single and it's just not where I can be. I have to be in New York because that's where all the singles are. And that's where you're told you have to stay until you get married. And they were like, no, it's fine. Just come, no commitment. Just have a little look at the community, have an interview, do a little mock class, have fun, and it'll be no commitments whatsoever. So I decided, you know what? It's fun to go to Texas. It's good to network. If I want to work there eventually one day, it would be bad to turn it down. So I decided to go. And they knew what they were doing because I felt absolutely in love with it. The community was so warm and welcoming. The school was nice and small. It was the exact demographic that I really felt passionate about working with. The rest of the staff at the school were incredibly nice, and everyone was there for the right reasons. And I was really stuck at that point because I went back to New York telling all my friends about this incredible experience, a bit conflicted about not knowing what to do. And the responses that I got were really confusing to me as well. Some of my friends said, please go, we're living vicariously through you. You know, we're not going to go because we're still single and we have to stay stuck here. But you know what, you should go and we'll live it through you. And the other responses I got were, definitely don't go because you'll write your rights to marriage away. There's nothing there for you. And these were comments that I got from my mentors, which I was really upset by because these are people who taught me about the concepts of emuna and having faith in God. And yet they're telling me that I can only have faith that I'll find my significant other in the, you know, 15 mile radius of the city. So I was really upset by this. And I decided that after a lot of consultation and going to the Kosher Chili Fair in Dallas, that I was gonna actually go and move to Texas. And it was the best decision of my life. It was really hard at times being single there. I was living on my own, which I loved, but at times it did get really lonely. I also did make a deal with a school that I would go home. And by home, I mean to New York for the weekends so that I can date. And I did that a lot in the beginning, and then it got really tiring very quickly. And so I actually took a lot of breaks from dating in my first year there. And I felt that was very healthy for me. I felt like I was getting to know myself a lot more. I did make a lot of great friends there. I wouldn't say a lot. I would say quality over quantity. We got each other through a lot. But a lot of the times I was spending time with myself, which was also really refreshing. And I really got to know what calmed me down in times of stress and what made me happy when I was low and what made me low and what made me anxious. And it was really a great time to just get to know myself and appreciate me for me and not for the constant busyness of always being with friends and always being a family and always going on dates. But I did know from the beginning that if I wanted to get married and live in Dallas, which I did, I would have to put a lot of hishtadlus in, which is why I originally made the deal with the school to go back to New York. But on top of that, I also had to decide that I was going to date no matter what, and there was not going to be any limit to my embarrassment. Like, I wasn't going to say I'm not going to do X because that's too much out of my comfort zone. I need to do everything that I can in order to say that I've put all of my energy into it. And so I downloaded JSwipe, which I had before, but I didn't like it and deleted it. And I set my settings for the entire world. And I didn't expect anything to come from it because I was just doing it so that I could say that I've done it. And so I say that I've done it all. And it turns out that I matched with someone in the UK, which now you know where I live, this is a spoiler alert. And I found the person who I ended up marrying and having two kids with over J-Swipe while I was living in Dallas, which is something that I wouldn't have done if I didn't take the move. I wouldn't recommend someone making a big move in their singlehood expecting that that move would grant them automatic results in finding their significant other. The thing that I had to think about was that in New York, I had a 0% chance of having my dream job, even though I was offered, thank God, really nice opportunities at different schools in the tri-state area. And I would have a 50% chance of finding my significant other. Whereas if I made this move, I had a 100% chance of having my dream job and a new experience and a 50% chance of finding my significant other. So in that sense, the odds were equal. There was no guarantee that I was going to get married in New York. 3 years of living there didn't yield any results. But I did have a really good opportunity in my hands in the place that I was moving to. And something that I realized was that I didn't want New York to just become a waiting room for me, which is what it had become for a lot of my friends who were staying there because they felt like that's where they needed to be. And they started to resent it. And they started to resent the fact that they have to find someone. They started to resent the fact that they wanted to find someone. And I started feeling very similarly. And I didn't want that to be my experience. I wanted to take new opportunities. Advice that I would give someone who was toying with the idea of moving somewhere new during singlehood is to definitely think about how you can make singlehood work in that community, to really think about how you can put in all of your efforts to make sure that you're living the best life of your singlehood, but also continuing to put your energies into dating, figuring out how it's possible before you go, and then going in with an open mind and taking full advantage of all of the experiences.
Okay, before going on to our second guest, I had three reflections on Danielle's experience with moving that I'd really love to just flesh out. One is that I love that she specified moving somewhere far really taught her how to sit with herself, that it helped her learn what helps her, who she is, and what she needs. That's something that I think is so, so hard and that many of us don't give time to and are also a bit scared to give time to, meaning being alone for many of us is really difficult and lonely feeling and hard. And I think it's something that is such a crucial skill that we need, and a skill that you're gonna need even once you're married. Yes, I said it. Even once you're married, there's gonna be many times you will have to learn to sit by yourself, to know how to comfort yourself, to know what you need. It's much easier to develop that skill when you have the space, when not being in a relationship, than struggling to define it when you're already part of a unit. I think it's really great that this experience really afforded her that opportunity. I think also knowing yourself is only going to help you that much more in future relationships, because when you're able to really have that alone time to get down to the core of who you are, what moves you, what you need, you're going to be able to express it that much more to your partner when you clearly know it, and it'll only help your relationship thrive. I think that's a really, really great takeaway that the experience gave her. The second thing that I love that Danielle called out was how she saw right away the hypocrisy through her mentor's advice regarding dating. That many of the mentors said that you're giving up opportunities and it's not going to be a good form of hishtadlus to leave. Having real emuna is recognizing, if I'm doing everything that I can and setting up genuine opportunities for dating, which she did, then that is her hishtadlut. And hishtadlut is the only thing we can do. It's the only thing we can control, no matter where we are. And I feel like sometimes we get too bogged down in what's being done as the quote unquote classic effort, meaning what is everyone else doing? I get that there's something to that, but I think sometimes in that we forget that Hashem runs the world. And your story might unfold completely differently than other people's. Real emuna means that if we're genuinely doing our part, Hashem is going to fill in the rest how and when he's supposed to. And I don't view personally hishtadlut as staying where I am at the expense of feeling down or unfulfilled so that then Hashem can send me my partner and then I will X, Y, Z. The goal is to lead happy and meaningful lives right now, with or without a partner. And I'm not sure if maybe her mentors were nervous just to steer her in the wrong direction, but I really appreciate that she recognized right away that that's not actually genuine emuna. The last takeaway from Danielle that I really appreciated was about figuring out how to set up your dating life before you go swim or new. This is something which we'll get to in another episode that my husband and I talk about a lot, because it's the same consideration he took into account before he left Israel to come to the States to date before we met. I think it's so important that if you are going to go somewhere new and dating is part of the experience that you want to potentially be open to having there, to beforehand figure out what does that look like. I think the irony is that we're usually going to plan it one way and Hashem will probably end up doing it a completely different one. But at least our part of our personal effort is knowing that we're allowing Hashem's plan to come through Teva, right? We have to kind of leave a portal open for the natural effort or the natural course of events to kind of come through. That's our part, and Hashem takes care of the rest. So as long as we set up our lives, our situations, so that something can come to fruition, that's our effort. And I think it's great that she mentions to be intentional about that beforehand and give that a thought or two, because it might actually dissuade you from going to specific places. It might also give you a more realistic picture when you're there, if you knew this is going to be a hard place to date, that you knew that going in. So I think that's something to really consider. Okay, on to guest number two.
Hey, my name is Talia Molotsky. I am living right now in Chicago, in Skokie, Illinois. And I also am a very good friend of Zahava's, so I'm so happy to be here. And I wanted to share with you a little bit about my journey. I know we're talking about different moves, different transitions, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about my transition from living in New York City after and before I went to Yeshiva University for undergraduate school and graduate school, and then ultimately moving to Israel for a year and then moving home. I loved living near my friends when I lived in New York City. It was an amazing experience in that regard. I always had friends over. My friends and I always opened our apartment, and we always had Shabbos meals, and we let people have Sheva Brachos, you know, in our space. And it was such like a friends rich time in life. On the other hand, I would say I was always a family person. I always appreciated my own space. When I thought about what it was like to live in my young single life, I didn't think about so much. I always pictured it with a family. And as much as I tried to picture like living in Teaneck with a family or living in the Five Towns with a family, I just felt like I wanted to live at home with my family. And actually for me personally, COVID really gave me the opportunity to be able to move home and just try it out. There was never like a minute where I'm like, I'm moving home. But after like a little bit of back and forth, I came to Chicago and I just found myself in my gut just looking for jobs in Chicago. I was really enjoying being at home with family, close to parents, close to grandparents, getting the opportunity to just like reconnect with my parents in an adult way, which was really great. A few things I definitely recommend to people when they think about moving home is to like know yourself, because I happen to be someone that's like very proactive with friends, but if I was not, being home would be a really, really big challenge. There are not a lot of people in my age range and my stage of life here, and it's been just an adjustment. Like, I think I have had to make my definition of friends a lot broader, and a lot of my friends are over 10 years older than me, have kids, have spouses, and that's great. Like, friends can have any shape, any color, any, you know, any sort of definition, but just to be aware that like it's going to look really, really different from what college might have looked like, or from what your time in Washington Heights in the Upper West Side, in Brooklyn, in Queens, in Yerushalayim, like anywhere that's really, really rich with young single people. I feel so happy about my decision. I'm close to grandparents and I'm close to a lot of my childhood friends. And I will say a few things also that stood out to me, but that I think about for people is, yeah, knowing yourself. If you're someone that needs a lot of structure and like a lot of like pushing in order to get yourself up and out of the house, it doesn't mean don't move home, but I would say just like adjust your expectations a little bit, you know, like it's not going to look exactly the same. And that's also okay. Something else I would say is that it's really important to have some difficult conversations with your parents in coming home. What I mean by that is like, what are the expectations of your parents, of you, as to like what you're going to contribute to be home? Many people move home because of like the financial ease, but do your parents expect you to pay some sort of rent? Do they expect you to pay for your food? Do they expect you to, I don't know, do they expect you to help out around the house, to make dinner a few times a week, and maybe thinking about things that you can offer to the household, and not because you owe it to your parents, but any place where you're going to stay. You want to, you know, make your keep and feel like you really belong there. And oftentimes feeling like you belong is by contributing. I don't know. I think that was important to me. And honestly, you're going to need these communication skills anyway. So I try to reframe it in a way where, like, this is such a positive experience to be able to practice these difficult conversations that you'll need for life anyway with a partner on someone who is so safe, you know, like your parents. And even if it doesn't go really well, you know, you can kind of return and come back from that and just be able to learn. So in that way, that was a really positive experience for me, getting a chance to express my needs and express, you know, like kind of what I hoped to be able to give to this new relationship with my parents. The only challenge I would say for me is I'm very different from my parents in terms of my social, I guess, expectations. I love having people over, and my parents are much more private people, don't always love to have people over at the house. And I think that for me was just like, again, just like an adjustment. And I think if you can walk that line very humbly and just understand, you know, that you're living with people that are different from you, and that at the end of the day, you're living in their home as much as it's also a place where you want to belong, I think that can really help a lot in terms of kind of easing some of that, you know, those growing pains, and growing pains in the best possible way. But like, I, you know, I've had to learn that I need to invite myself out for Shabbos meals. Again, I know I keep saying expectations, but really it's about expectations. I wish anyone really good luck. You can totally reach out to me if you have any questions, if there's anything I could be of help with in moving. I feel like I was the recipient of so many like nuggets of wisdom from other people, and I'd love to be able to give over any pieces of advice or be a sounding board for people thinking about it. I've loved my experience and highly recommend for the right person, but it's been a great chance to reconnect to family. And my friends are all like, oh my gosh, Talia, we've been waiting for you to do this. You've always loved home.
I resonated a lot with Talia's move because I actually moved home at a few different points in my singlehood. Once during college, and then again after graduate school, and then after I moved back from Israel. And there were so many amazing positives of moving back home. And I don't just mean the obvious ones like meals, laundry, which are huge. Getting to save on rent is a big deal. But for me, having a space where I didn't have to be on and that wasn't with other singles was actually really important and really healthy for me. But as Talia said, each move back definitely came with having hard conversations. I think one of the biggest challenges in moving back home as an older single is that we have lived and had our own experiences and developed our own ideas. We can start to feel, rightfully so, really independent and very separate from our family unit in many ways. But just because we feel that way doesn't always mean that's how our parents view us. And so moving back home, there came this tension of feeling like I'm this adult child. It's funny that I'm working full time and making a salary, but my parents ask me where I'm going when I leave the house, or they always know when I'm out on a date. And so, especially after living away from home multiple times, readjusting to the rules of a house where I was used to more privacy and coming and going as I pleased and really not having to answer to anyone was hard for me. And just like Talia said, I think the key here is really being able to go and knowing you're going to have open conversations with parents while also managing expectations. Because at the end of the day, hopefully as understanding and kind as our parents are, it really is their home. And so it's really key to try and flesh out some of these standards beforehand, or to maybe give it some thought to avoid some big Sean bias pitfalls. I also really appreciated her feedback on being more socially proactive. In general, the longer you're single, feeling like you have a good circle of friends is hard enough on its own, to the point that being social is probably one of the main things keeping people in single communities. But moving back home doesn't mean you can't have that. It just means in all likelihood there probably aren't so many singles in your area, so it's important to be willing to put in more effort to seeking those relationships out, whether it's broadening and expanding your vision or idea of what a group of friends looks like Talia said, and or going out to see friends or going to social events in your area more often. I also don't know everyone's financial status, obviously, but if you are going to move home, I will say that having a car is a game changer. And last but not least, guest number 3.
Alrighty. Intentionally going to remain anonymous, but I'm a friend of Zahava's and her husband, Jesse. Okay, let's rock and roll.
I moved to Borough Park. What led to the decision to move? I was about to enter third year of law school, and I had heard from the masses that third year of law school can be more chill than the other years of law school. With that, I was like, okay, I'm going to have more time on my hands. How can I maximize this time this upcoming year? And that really drove my decision. I was like, you know, I want to immerse myself in Torah and learn more and take advantage of the time that I may not have in the foreseeable future. That was really what drove my decision to move. So I moved to Borough Park, which is a super Torah-centric environment. I'm super warm. I'm not Hasidish, but I love Hasidim. And I was super fortunate. I was able to set up like a full morning Seder for myself for the entire year as like a law school student, which is nuts. I should probably add some context here, which is to say I'm a Baal Tshuva, and so like, whenever I have little moments to, I guess you could say, compensate for like lost things in learning or in, frankly, like from culture, I try to take advantage of that. I was definitely scared because I was leaving the Upper West Side where I had like, first of all, just a very convenient setup. I was close to school, you know, and I had like social touch points. I can't say that I had like such a strong chevra, but I had friends on the Upper West Side. And obviously it's also very familiar to me. I know the Upper West Side. I grew up nearby in New Jersey. I was leaving something known into something unknown entirely. I moved to Borough Park. I didn't know much. There's a chabura over there, which is like, frankly, for Bachrim and for Balei Tshuva. I'll give a quick plug here for the Brooklyn chabura, led by Rabbi Eisenberger. It was a real kind of leap of faith, but it really, Baruch Hashem, worked out super, super well. I was nervous about being in too from of a place, honestly, for me. So, you know, it just feels like stifling. So I was definitely nervous about that, but it was really a hands out to Shammai moment, and it's been one of the best years of my life, honestly. What was I most excited about? I generally like change. I like new adventures. I did study abroad in undergrad, which was like one of the best and most formative periods of my life. So I was like, I'm going to treat this like study abroad. I'm going to go to Borough Park, you know, as this Baal Tshuva Litvak guy. And like, whatever, I'm a tourist in this environment, and let's see what happens. And like, that totally took the pressure off and made it amazing for me. What do I ideally look for in a place to live in? So like, I very much respond to my environment, like very, very strongly. I would say in that sense, I have like a thin skin. I'm very, very absorbent. I got off the subway and I walked like a block. I don't know. I just loved it. Like, I've lived in a lot of fun places. You know, I've lived in Jerusalem. I've lived in the city. I've lived in Crown Heights. Lived in the city again on the Upper West Side. I lived in Copenhagen for a little while. I lived in North Carolina. So I've lived in a lot of places. Borough Park is definitely my second favorite place in the world. So number one is the energy. Number two, in a more pragmatic sense, I look for a place that's a Makom Torah. Was there anything that helped the actual transition? Well, you know, I'm with a chabura. That makes the whole day. I don't think I could do Borough Park alone, like as an actual alone person with no attachment to a community. For being single is tough for everybody, for sure, who's in the sugya. But Balei Tshuva have an extra little piece there, because like, we don't have like a point of reference community for the most part. It has become for me just such an important part of my life. It is an amazing community. I feel way, way, way more of a community here than I did living in the city, honestly. The only loneliness I feel is in like, maybe not cosmic sense, but in like in the deep sense of like, I'm not married and I would like to be married. And, you know, so that like non-completeness, that lack of wholeness, that I feel. But in terms of the more like a social sense, I don't feel lonely at all. I have a lot of friends around, Baruch Hashem, a lot of Rebbeim around, and Chavrusas around. So like, I, socially, this has been a place where I've thrived. It's been one of the best years of my life. And I've just like really seen the joy that comes with a from life lived with full immersion and no holding back, no hesitation. That's really what I think this year gave me. This was the greatest growth experience I've had since I was literally in yeshiva in Israel. Moving to a new environment, if you're the type of person who's never done it and like who's never been on their own or who's never like really challenged themselves in that way, I think there's a lot to be gained. A lot to be gained, but just you need to make sure that you're surrounded by the right people. But yeah, I think my main takeaway is just, if you're toying with the idea of moving, just isolate what it is or why it is that you think you're moving. And if that reason is, after isolating it, if that reason is legitimate, productive, and you know, you've spoken it over with a mentor or a rav, I say go for it and hatzlacha rava.
Okay, I had a lot of thoughts about our anonymous third guest, but I narrowed it down to two, which fall under this bigger umbrella of realizing how happy he is, which at first glance, he attributes much to being in Brooklyn. And if you're from New York, you are probably wondering, is this guy insane? And that's probably a bit valid. But really what I think it comes down to are two things that are really contributing to his happiness. Number one, that he specifically chose an environment once it already matched his religious needs. based on how it made him feel. I really loved his phraseology of, I'm very absorbent of my surroundings. I actually think many of us are, but we just don't pay a lot of attention to it or question it. Or if we do, it's not always so simple to give space to it as a religious Jew because we need to be tied to a specific place because of food and shul and Shabbos. So granted, our ability to actually live anywhere is limited. I know many friends who tell me that they actually hate the singles community where they currently live, but they feel like, where else am I supposed to go? And I feel like a lot of us try and seek that out, like these dream destinations in our vacations, which is obviously fun, but we're far more affected by where we experience our day to day. And I do think there are a bunch of places within that framework that we're seeking a religious lifestyle that are exciting and new and different that we can consider. So I'm challenging you to ask yourself, how does where you currently live affect you emotionally? And are there other parts of the world that you'd love to try living in, even in the short term, and can you make that work? The second piece is that he's clearly so happy because he's surrounded by meaning. And very obviously for him, that meaning is an environment that celebrates and is centered around Torah and Yiddishkeit. For some, hearing this is not going to resonate at all because maybe your feelings towards religion are complicated. And this is an interesting phenomenon I discussed in a previous episode called Religious Evolution During Singlehood. But I'm broadening this category to meaning in general for that reason. I definitely felt at many points in my singlehood like my life felt empty. And I'm not trying to sound dramatic. Of course, I had a great life and I had so much to be thankful for. But it is really hard to feel depth and meaning at times when you're so wanting to seek it out in a family life with a spouse or with children, etc. And yes, I picked up new hobbies. I traveled to a bunch of places with friends. I made expensive purchases and splurged on things just because I could. And they helped and are definitely important in the right time and place. But they were more like colorful band-aids on a big wound. And they just served as this ephemeral patch. What really helped me in the long term was seeking out meaning throughout singlehood. As human beings, we're hardwired to need that. And I really resonate with speaker number three because the two main areas that I sought out meaning were in Torah learning, and the second was chesed. I'm going to give a strong shout out to my mom here, who is a chesed machine and who lives by the motto that chesed almost instantly makes her feel better, which really, really, really is true. And so when I felt myself getting stuck in my feelings and feeling low and down about being single, I would volunteer somewhere or I'd visit people in my neighborhood who I knew were lonely. There's something really significant about investing time in other people or other events that take you out of yourself and remind you that there's a bigger world just beyond what you're feeling and dealing with at this moment, and really helps put it back into perspective a bit. That's not to minimize the struggle, but it really, really helps take the ache off of it a bit. But what's determined as meaningful is going to differ for each person. So I think it's our responsibility to find out what would give my life more meaning right now. What would I enjoy doing that could fill a deeper part of me? And maybe it's going to an awe-inspiring shiur. Maybe it's even giving one, if that's your thing. Maybe it's volunteering. I know a lot of people love to spend time with their nieces and nephews. Maybe it's taking on a project. Speaker number three actually mentioned in a cutout section of this interview that he'd run marathons after each breakup. And he mentioned he ran a lot of marathons. Another friend of mine began a family genealogy project during singlehood, and she actually discovered lost cousins. I want to also totally embarrass and give a shout out to the Katzman Kitchen, Ahuva Schwartz, who I'm blown away by that week after week she posts on her Instagram the hundreds of meals that she makes for soldiers on different bases every single week. It's been really inspiring seeing different ways that people got creative with the meaning that they found in the stage. And I think it's really key for us because it's important to remind ourselves that our life has depth and purpose beyond just what we're dealing with in a stage when it can feel really, really devoid of that. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed listening to these three very different accounts of moving and trying something new, which gave you some food for thought. I'd love any and all feedback, so if after this episode you're on Spotify, feel free to answer the poll at the end, or if not, just send me a direct email to singledout613, singledout613 @gmail.com. Wishing you guys many exciting upcoming adventures, and stay tuned for new episodes dropping soon.